When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the weekly internet show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, sand, space, swords, and all things in between. I am Daniel Selke. No, I'm Dan Selke. You're Daniel. I'm Dan Selke, the editor of winnerscoming.net. You are Daniel, an IE, the other editor of winnerscoming.net. Daniel, how you doing today?
Oh, nice. Yeah, I am Dan Roman here with Daniel Selke. We are choosing chaos today. I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing adequately pleasant. And how are all of you doing? I wonder if you see what we're doing. We're so funny. Fantasy fan Robert Martha Nicole. Glad to see everybody today. Obviously, we are going to talk a spot about Dune Part 2, the new sand theme motion picture taking the world by storm. But first, we do have, I know I said this every week, and it's always true, to be fair, we do have some fun, exciting news about the coming of House of the Dragon season 2. It's getting close. I can feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes. There are dragons all around me, and so the feeling gets bigger. So, Daniel, what have we learned about the approaching release date of House of the Dragon season 2 on HBO and Max?
I was waiting for you to make that into a poem like Josh Brolin, who we're not going to talk about right now because Dune. But yeah, so House of the Dragon. See, yes, he's been on a poetry kick. I watched him with Colbert recently and it was very fun. But yeah, all that aside, House of the Dragon focused Westeros. We have stuff to discuss. We got a release month confirmed this week. Somebody said a thing. I don't know if they were supposed to say a thing, but they said it. And that is Warner Brothers Discovery Chief of Streaming and Gaming, J.B. Perrette, said at a telecom technology conference that House of the Dragon season 2 is dropping in June. Cue shock at this revelation. Dan, are you surprised? Did you see this coming? We all know you.
Well, yes. How can you even ask me that? Like, it was a couple of weeks ago where I laid out my grand unified theory of the House of the Dragon season 2 release date, where, yeah, we determined, because the rumor was June, and then the other confirmed thing was summer, it had to be the last like week and a half of June. But this is an official, actually, executive saying it. I think it is a bit sooner than maybe some people expected. Like, we had colleagues say it seems a bit early because they might run it later in the summer. But it has been almost 2 years, so it makes sense they want to get it out. I also almost worry, because they're doing reshoots now, through like a good chunk of March, as I understand it, probably because they had to pick up things they couldn't shoot during the writer's strike. But considering that the show, I mean, HBO was confident enough to give us a full trailer like months ago, or a teaser trailer. By the way, I'll just lodge a formal complaint against the teaser trailer, proper trailer distinction. I think it's stupid. I don't like it. Just call it a trailer. Just stop.
Agreed.
So they were confident enough to do that. And the show does release, thank heavens, one episode per week, like a TV show should. So they have time to build up to things. If one episode's not completely done, it's all right. It's going to be like 5 weeks after the first one premieres. So June sounds cool. I'm ready for June. And there's been a lot of hype lately because there's going to be an Entertainment Weekly photo spread coming with probably a big article to match. There's going probably going to be a proper trailer, not just a teaser trailer, as they that diminutive, tiny, redheaded stepchild of the trailer, an actual trailer, which, again, I think is very silly. But things are coming. It feels like they are ramping up. Probably by next week, we will be neck deep in Fire and Blood, which I don't recommend literally, yes, but metaphorically, I'm all about it.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting times. I'm a little surprised that, you know, we're getting this confirmation that the, you know, the trailer's coming, or not that the trailer's coming, that the show's coming, and it's only 3 months away, and they haven't announced a release date. It's a little surprising, but getting the show in June, I feel like that works. You know, a lot of people are thinking of House of the Dragon as a summer show, but like Game of Thrones historically was like a late winter, early spring show. So I feel like, you know, scooting a little closer to that time frame works. And with the reshoots, I'll just hope maybe they're reshooting stuff at this point for a little later in the season. Like, we know they're doing some battle scenes this month in the reshoots. Yeah. So potentially that's episode 4 or later is kind of the word on the street. Because we know the Battle of Rook's Rest is coming in episode 4. But yeah, all things told, House of the Dragon season 2 coming in June. I would be shocked if we don't get a trailer this month. So keep an eye out, and a proper trailer. None of this teaser nonsense.
Yeah, and everyone out there is excited. Number one Marvel fan. Hey, what's up, guys? Not much Marvel fan. Sup with you?
Hey.
Trailer soon. I'm agreed. Everyone is going to be excited. And Leo says, so House of the Dragon after the finale of Hacks, which comes back May 2nd, I think. Yeah, probably. You know how. Hey, Julie, don't sleep as much as you want. We are here morning, noon, and night. Hacks is going to come back on May 2nd. Daniel, I think I know the answer to this. You don't watch Hacks, right?
I do not watch Hacks. I don't even know what Hacks is. I'll be straight with you all.
It's great.
Sorry,
it's this Max comedy series about like an aging stand-up comedian who hires a younger stand-up comedian to help her be a better stand-up comedian. Really, really good. One of like the few like Max original hits. It came in May, so if it wraps up in June, maybe that would, you know, lead it into House of the Dragon. You want to go from that to that. And I think Fantasy Fans said it could go up against The Boys, which I'm sure be fine for. And yeah, Nicole, excited we don't have to wait all summer long for the House of the Dragon. Me too. Yeah, bring it. The real question is when they're going to drop the Rings of Power, because that is a bigger mystery to me than House of the Dragon is, because we haven't heard anything about the release date, except it's probably coming out this year. I think they're going to avoid House of the Dragon, if you'll excuse the cliche, like the plague, to avoid a unfavorable comparison like last time.
I think that's funny because they're going to get compared either way. I think if Rings of, you know, the upside is they won't have to sit through it while their season's on, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think if they come out after, it's still going to get compared to House of the Dragon. It's not like people are choosing to watch House of the Dragon and not that Lord of the Rings show. I think there's not, I would love to be a fly on the wall hearing the thought process of the executives and whoever decides whether to run these shows concurrently. But all that aside, I think you're probably right. I think Rings of Power, I wouldn't be surprised to see until later in the year. June is packed, and Amazon has The Boys coming. So there's no sane reason that I can think of why they would air The Rings of Power and The Boys at the same time.
Even more than House
of the Dragon. Because those are like Prime Video's two of their biggest shows. So I'm sure they want to spread those out. And in June, so we've got The Boys, season four. We've got House of the Dragon, season two starting. We've got The Acolyte, I believe, that Star Wars show taking place in the mm-hmm. Golden Age of the Jedi. That's coming to Disney Plus. And for all of the Chicagoans / foodies, The Bear season three is coming back.
No, it is.
As well. Yes, Dan, The Bear is great. I'm sorry you're biased against it because you're missing out.
No comment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
What else is happening on the House of the Dragon front, Dan?
So I kind of want to get your take on this and how you feel about it. So there are some rumbles that Sion Brooke, who played Emma Arryn in the first season, died very tragically in the premiere, that her talent agency mentioned her in relation to season two. So there are kind of rumors that there may be a flashback that includes characters like her. And I saw people say even King Jaehaerys, who was the king that preceded Viserys, who we saw in the opening scene. What do you make of this? Because we haven't had flashbacks in the show yet. And I don't know how I feel about it.
I mean, it's a rumor. I saw the note that the talent agency just kind of mentioned her name along with a list of other actors who are in House of the Dragon in a post about House of the Dragon season two. It could have just been saying her name because she was in the first season. I have heard about a flashback coming. I think it's fine. Look, there's nothing wrong with flashbacks inherently, although I do, I really did like, and I'm not sure how much people appreciate how good an idea this was, that Game of Thrones avoided them. If you exclude the cliche, like the plague, they really were diligent about not having the dream sequences of flashbacks, to just keep it to what we can see and hear and feel in the moment. Maybe because the show was so narratively sprawling and complex that we don't want to muddy the waters with, you know, alternate visions of what could be and what once was. It's like, it's already hard enough. Just, we're not going to make it more difficult for you. But there's no reason the show can't have them. I mean, there are lots of good flashbacks in TV history. So if they bring on one, if I were writing it, I think I would do like a short flashback at the very top of the season. And that's it. Just to kind of show what has been lost. Show kind of a sense of how good things were before when things were peaceful. Diving into this maelstrom of fire and blood we're about to have sprayed all up on our faces. But I have no objection as long as it's done well. That's my line on pretty much anything with TV. Do it well, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Do it crappily, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. I, you know, flashbacks, the danger with flashbacks is using them to dump a bunch of exposition that's unnecessary, or kind of instead of doing the heavy lifting with your actual main narrative. But you're right. There are lots of shows that have done it well over the years. And I think that the restraint of Game of Thrones, because there was only that one. Actually, that's not true. There was one in season five with Maggie the Frog. And then once we get into Bran, we start getting them. But Bran is there in the present, in Bran's present. So that's kind of a tricky way to do flashbacks. I hope that you're right, and that if they do any flashbacks, they kind of treat them like cold opens or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the Wheel of Time has been doing that, and I think it has worked really, really well for that show, using like, you know, a cold open or two a season to give us a flashback. I think showing what was lost right before showing how this family is now tearing each other's throats out over a chair that one of their ancestors made would be a really, could be really effective if they do it well. So I'll hope for the Emma Aaron flashback. I want to see King Jaehaerys, please, now, HBO. But that's not all. We do have one thing that's a little more concrete this week to report about this. Oh, Dan, you have a thought. Your finger was raised.
Oh, no, I was just saying one other thing. I'm agreeing with you. Please continue.
I see. Well, why don't you tell us about this one other thing? Because I have a feeling you know a little bit more about it than me.
Okay. Just a quick casting announcement. There's an actor, English actor named Tim Faraday, who will be playing Amos Bracken in season two. Now, again, not a huge important character. Not going to be in much fan fiction, although you never know. Sometimes the ones pop off. What I do like about this kind of casting is that we've also heard that the show will feature the Battle of the Burning Mill, which is a conflict between the Blackwoods and the Brackens at the start of the Dance of the Dragons. And the Blackwood-Bracken kind of rivalry is just a fun little kind of corner of the lore where I'm not sure we got any of it on Game of Thrones, where there's these two families in the Riverlands, the Blackwoods and the Brackens, and they've hated each other for generations upon generations. It's kind of like the Hatfields and McCoys, but because this is George R. R. Martin's Westeros, instead of lasting for like 10 years and going on for like 1,000 years, because that's just what Martin does, just like exaggerate everything. And I think a Blackwood and Bracken were the two people who were vying for Rhaenyra's hand on House of the Dragon, the fourth episode, and like the little kid stabs the older guy who's razzing him. And those two families hate each other. And I like that part of the mythology. It's a fun little side story we didn't really get in Game of Thrones. So it'll be fun to see it play out here. Getting some Blackwoods, getting some Brackens. And you know what? Forget Team Green and Team Black. Team Blackwood and Team Bracken. Choose your fighter, and we can have that go back and forth. You know, I take it back. Fan fiction about Bracken-Blackwood couplings could definitely become a thing.
I was gonna. That's some Romeo and Juliet stuff waiting to happen there. You know, with the Blackwoods and Brackens. Yeah, I would love it if they included this. And knowing that Ryan Condal is such a fan of Martin's lore and his world, I'm really hoping that they did find a way to include the Brackens and the Blackwood rivalry even more this season, because you're right. It is a fun little corner of kind of the political landscape. You know, while all of these bigger wars are going on, there's still these two families that just cannot stand each other that happen to live fairly close to each other. You know, they serve the same they're vassals of the same Riverland lord. So, yeah, I think that would be pretty fun. Game of Thrones did kind of streamline it. There is, if I remember right, there's a great scene in a dance of dragons or a dance with dragons where Jaime goes and kind of tentatively settles the dispute between the Blackwoods and Brackens on his way back to King's Landing. And that leads
to the books.
Cliffhanger for Jaime in the books that we're still waiting to hear what happens with. I could see it being a cool way to kind of show how these other families are taking advantage of the division between the Targaryens to maybe push their own kind of issues a little bit. You know, if maybe the Blackwoods support one, the Brackens support the other.
They do.
And they use the war as a way to be like, hey, come give us support against our enemies who are serving your enemies. It just feels like there's potential there. So yeah, Blackwoods, Brackens, House of the Dragon season two.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
All right, Dan. So is there no other House of the Dragon Game of Thrones to talk about? I know that over the weekend, you saw a movie called Dune Part 2, and I believe you want to talk about it. Now, not everybody can see it. I've seen it early. Some of us got to see it early. I don't know with me. It's very fun. But Dan, now that it's out, it's a big success. People are seeing it all over the place. It's making tons of money. What do you think? What do you think of it? And what do you think of my... I want to do the musical cue, but I don't want to embarrass myself. I'll just do it.
Nice.
It's a good one.
Nice.
That's my favorite noise from the Dune movies. I like it.
Yeah. I think if you have two ears and you've seen Dune, there's a pretty good chance you've been walking around your house since making that musical cue noise. I know I have been. My
alone.
Partner is not very happy about it, even though she's been doing it too. We can maybe give the big, do we want to give a big spoiler warning here? I don't know how deep we want to go into this. I figured we can kind of, you know, let us know in the chat if you really want us to avoid spoilers, because Dune's been out for around a week now and we have thoughts. I did get to see it early, kind of, because a lot of theaters near me just decided, like, the hell with it, we're going to start showing Dune the day before it's actually out. So I drove to IMAX to see it on the 29th of February. It was a rad leap day. What an incredible movie. I have some adaptation things I'm a little curious about that I had thoughts about, but like as a film, I think it's tremendous. Like, this is one of those movie going experiences where it's like, it's an experience to see it in the movie. Like if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Dune Part 2 in theaters, like stop listening to this and go watch Dune Part 2 and then come back and listen to the rest, because it's an amazing movie. And I don't know just how much seeing it at home will, you know, it'll still be a great movie, but it won't replicate like the awe of, you know, seeing these things on a huge screen. The sound design was crazy for, you know, some of these scenes where like people are riding sandworms and they really took pains to make you feel like you're there in the moment with the characters. I think it's exceptional. I really can't gush enough about Dune Part 2, even though there are things that as a fan of the books, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this decision. I think the movie itself, you just have to step back and appreciate it for, you know, the excellent piece of filmmaking that it is. Now that you can talk more freely, Dan, what thoughts do you have about Dune Part 2? Because you had seen it, but you had to restrain yourself last time.
Yeah, I'm going to get a bit more into spoilers now. I mean, generally speaking, I agree with you, and I think our watchers do too. Fantasy Fan says, fantastic movie, loved it. Best movie of the year so far, yeah. I agree with that. Julie and Nicole are both going to go see it this weekend. You're making me want to go watch it again with all your talk of seeing it on the big screen. That is what stuck to me the most. The way that it was shot and meant for a big screen. I talked about it last week.
Yes.
That it almost makes you wonder, like, what have movies been doing for the past several years? And I think that part of that is I'm being serious. Like, more and more movies are being shot with the intention of eventually having a lot of play at home on streaming services, on TV, more streaming nowadays, because that will maximize how many folks see it. And that can still be great, but there is something special about a movie like Dune and Dune Part 2 that clearly they take like the most powerful cameras meant to see like the furthest into the distance, get the most detail that you do appreciate most on a giant ass screen. So I did like that about it a lot. And I was carried away by the story in general. Yeah, more or less. I really liked it. I laugh, I'm supposed to laugh. What I want at a movie like this is to be not just kind of visually awed, but sort of emotionally awed. And I guess my question for you is, Do you think the general thrust of the movie was successful? Like, for me, my favorite scene, the scene that got like worked the best for me, because I thought they were trying to really drive home the point of what the message was the bit where Paul Atreides, played by billionaire twink Timothée Chalamet, was giving his giant speech in front of the assembled masses of Fremen. And that's the moment where he's become not just like a leader, not just an exiled prince of the space realm, but like a kind of a creepy, dangerous messiah who holds such power that it's almost scary. And I did think it more or less worked. Like, I was kind of like, whoa, like, Timothy is like freaking me out a bit, which is their intent. Did that work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny with Dune a little bit because, you know, Frank Herbert's original book was written to kind of be this, you know, warning against the idea of charismatic leaders and, you know, placing all your faith in them, that they might not always be driven by completely altruistic goals, or even if they are, it could spiral into violence in unexpected ways. But he put those themes through the book so subtly that a lot of people missed them, to the point where he then wrote Dune Messiah as a follow-up to make it clearer. And I think the Dune films take that idea of Paul as a charismatic leader and that being dangerous, and kind of this, the ways that, you know, like radicalized zealotry can be bad for people. And it really blows that up in a way that I found even more compelling than the source material, because it's just much clearer at this stage of the story than it is in the source material. So I thought that worked. I thought that scene worked really, really well. That was one of my favorites too. Timothée Chalamet crushed it in that scene, you know, most of which is in another language, you know, a fake made up language, the Fremen language that, I read I watched an interview with Denis Villeneuve where he basically talked about how like a lot of people are just fluent in it now who worked on the film, because they had to be to do the lines and stuff. And they made an actual language. It was, I think you said this, David J. Peterson, the guy who made Dothraki for Game of Thrones,
obviously,
is the one who did the language for Dune, obviously. Cause if you have a made up language, you get that guy. So yeah, I think it worked. I think it was, as a story, it was powerful. It was moving. It worked really well as a two-part story, Dune 1 and Dune 2, better than I expected, honestly, because they did kind of split the book right in half, so that it made two kind of distinct separate holes. But I think those holes stood better on their own than I was maybe expecting. So yeah, I loved it. And I will be seeing it again. Like, I'll just be straight. I'm going to see it at least twice in movie theaters. Yeah. So did that work for you, Dan? Did you buy in to Paul Atreides and his struggle with this messianic, you know, prophecy propaganda?
I just said I did. I did.
Okay.
I asked you if you did.
You did.
That was me. So what are your props with the movie then, Dan? If you loved it so much, what are your issues? And also, how dare you?
Well, first off, none of my issues are with the movie as a movie. I think as a movie, Dune Part 2 is incredible. And I don't know that I would change anything about it. I do think it makes some decisions on the adaptation front that might have interesting ripple effects. So like the biggest examples that come to mind for me of those are kind of things to do with the time scale. So Dune has a few big time jumps in the middle of the book, like years pass while Paul is living with the Fremen. But the entirety of Dune Part 2, it gives us a solid timeline. So we know exactly how long it's been. And it has been less than 9 months from the end of Dune Part 1 to the end of Dune Part 2. And we know this, spoiler alert here, I am going to get into a spoiler about the adaptation right now. We know this because Lady Jessica is still pregnant with Alia, Paul's sister, by the end of Dune Part 2. So that gives us a solid time frame because she's pregnant at the start of the movie. She's pregnant at the end of the movie. Can't have been more than 9 months. I think that changes the nature of Paul and Chani's relationship because so in the book, they have a child together, Leto the second, who then dies during the conflict. It's really sad. And I was not sad to see that they cut that because that was a part of the book that was kind of hard to swallow. It does have an importance for their relationship though, because it's just a more mature relationship because they've been through more life experiences together versus the movie almost kind of makes it like young love for Paul and Chani that then she's really the main voice of dissent against him becoming this Messiah who's like, this is Bene Gesserit propaganda. That's much clearer. This is Bene Gesserit propaganda and Paul doesn't like it. And Chani doesn't like it. I think they made that a lot clearer in the movie. So that's one thing, you know, just the time elapsed with Chani, with Lady Jessica's a lot more evil, I would say, or much more morally ambiguous than she is in the book. I think she's way more sympathetic and less scary in the novel. But Rebecca Ferguson is a chaotic person who totally sells that. She was excellent.
It was fun. She was
but
good.
The fact that Alia, she was so good, but Alia is not born by the end of Dune Part 2. And in Dune, the book, she's like 4 years old by the end. How did you feel about the Alia stuff, Dan? Because I know you had thoughts on this before that you couldn't talk about.
The thoughts were, that was weird. I'm not sure I want to spoil that part, but I will ask JP's pretty good question. Do you guys buy the romance between Paul and Chani? Didn't really feel Chani's connection with him.
Yes.
In the beginning, I felt could have been tighter. Okay, Dan did it. Because the ending was fast. I wanted more. Great movie. He loved it.
Okay.
So you have thoughts about this. I bought it. I was put in mind of something that James Cameron once said. I think it was he was criticizing Marvel, where he was Avatar Dr. James Cameron, Titanic Dr. James Cameron. Do you remember that time he was talking about like Marvel movies and how they're always about like guys in their mid-20s with no families because that's sort of the default protagonist. Like they never have like a family or like a father have it. And there are issues with that, but I kind of felt like that this book was written in the 60s, published in the 60s, where, I don't know, it was probably a little more common to have a kid by the time you were like Timothée Chalamet's age. But there is a little something that maybe you don't want your desirable box office draw to have a kid he loses by the third act. So you make it a bit more, like you said, like teen love, like, oh, not teen love or what, how old they are, like young love.
Yeah.
It sped it up. I don't think it really hurt the movie much. I mean, it didn't bother me that much.
Same.
Did I buy it? Yeah, I bought it. I bought it because the whole thing, you know, that they had built up. They had like Chani teaching him how to sand walk. They had, you know, scenes of them in the tent. They had at least one hot, sweaty, sexy Fremen love scene aftermath of. Yeah, I bought the romance. I thought it was good. I like Jessica being scary. They changed things. I don't think it changed anything that was deadly to it. I was thinking about like the tendency to hold back on giving like heroes, like tying them down in movies. Like we want our heroes to be free and easy. Or at least Marvel does. I don't know if that's the reason they skipped this or not. As for Alia, I mean, it was fine. It was fun. It was creepy. It was weird that she wasn't born yet, but she still had a presence. We'll just say that. I mean, I liked it, though, because from what I've heard from Denis Villeneuve, he's not as comfortable with like the kind of weirder esoteric parts of Dune that get into the later books when things get like really odd, but
real weird.
Like that might be as far as he's willing to go, but it's still pretty far. Like it's still a fully sentient adult brained fetus being a character and talking.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird. It was creepy. I liked it. I thought it was fun. I had a great time.
Yeah, I think I thought it worked too. I liked it, even though I miss, you know, the presence of Alia as a person on screen. I can understand, you know, working with kids in productions can be hard. It can be real hit or miss depending on the casting and how good child actors are. And I can understand why they might have chosen to dodge that landmine and just shift it so that Alia is going to be a presence in the third movie, especially if they provided they make one, which I'm sure they will. Otherwise, there's something really difficult to cast a child to play a child who is like an adult as a child. I think that's a common thing, maybe not common, but you see that happen sometimes in books, like Claudia from Interview with the Vampire is another example. Oh, right. And it's hard to do that in real life, to take someone who looks like a four-year-old and make them have the gravitas of an adult. So I can understand why they made that change. I really can. I think in terms of Chani and Paul's relationship, I totally bought it. And a huge part of why is because the script and the actors were great. Zendaya was my like MVP of the movie. I really like everyone turned in great performances, but I especially enjoyed her in this movie. I thought she was really excellent. And Timothée Chalamet too, like, I was honestly like not an enormous fan of his when Dune Part One came out. And especially his scenes with Chani, I really enjoyed in this one. There were just some really natural acting back and forth chemistry things that I think worked for the two of them that I bought into. But it does, you know, what you said about the heroes not being tied down in modern, you know, movies aimed at younger movie going audiences or however we want to define it. I do worry about that just a little bit because, you know, Paul is supposed to be, he's tied down in so many ways, it makes your head spin. And that's kind of the point. So they did simplify it a little bit. But part of me almost wonders if that was at least a little bit due to just how much they were fitting in here. And once they got rid of the time jumps, they had to do it anyway, because they feasibly could not have had Chani get pregnant and have a kid in the time span of Dune Part Two the way that they did it. Just physically wouldn't have been possible, because obviously Jessica is still pregnant. So yeah, that's the cool thing with a movie like this. They made some big changes from the source material, but everything still works. It still totally feels like it's honoring Frank Herbert's story in a very intentional, very reverent way. And I don't know that I would change any of them back. I think it just made for a great movie. So yeah, so here's a question I want to feel to you, Dan.
Okay.
My feeling watching this is the kind of sci-fi movie. It's almost in the same echelon for me as like Lord of the Rings, where it's like, this feels like a definitive adaptation of Dune. Like, we have one now. Do you think people will still be talking about this, you know, 20 years from now? Did we just witness the birth of a new classic in this genre?
I don't know. I don't have Paul's prescience. I can't see that far ahead. I think Dune, this version of Dune, yeah, you're right. It feels like a big moment, a thing people can kind of, that is dense and knotty and complicated enough to appeal to hardcore fans of the book, but also kind of accessible enough to be loved by general audiences, which is surely their intent, which is what Lord of the Rings did so well too. Yeah. I can see this being a modern classic, whatever, especially if it has a third movie and a trilogy. Or also, I think they should do Children of Dune. Children of Dune is totally a book that has a lot of fun ups and downs that make a good movie. After Children, okay, fine, maybe not, because it gets a little weird. But the third book is really up for adaptation too.
Give us God Emperor, you cowards!
I hope they at least do Children of Dune, the third book. It also strikes, because right now franchises are king, right? That's in part because of Lord of the Rings, because of Harry Potter, because of Twilight, and then above all, first and foremost, forever in our heart, Marvel did this to movies, where everything is a giant franchise, or it's like a Netflix original that wins Oscars and no one's watched. Dune is obviously a franchise, but it's a franchise where these movies feel like they've earned the, like, there's enough to them to be this big and to have multiple movies and to need this much space to sprawl out, as opposed to, like, you know, Marvel's latest thing where it has two post-credit sequences. And can you go home and put a new piece of string from your mood board from this movie to that movie and check it off? This really feels like it needs this much space and heft and weight, which is great, because that's certainly what the studios want. And I think it serves the audiences too. It gives a really good entertainment experience to the audiences in a way that is tailor-made for this day and age. Maybe one of the reasons we couldn't have a definitive Dune until now is because movies weren't set up to tell a story this big on a canvas this big. Like, David Lynch tried to do it in one movie in 84, and he kept baby murderer adult Aaliyah, but it just didn't work. There just wasn't enough space. So this is a Dune for our time, and maybe a Dune for all time.
Yeah, I think part of it too is there's something really special about, like, when a creative, in this case a filmmaker, has a dream to make a thing because they loved it so much for years, and then they get that chance to make it. That's different than just like Marvel signing on somebody to do some next movie that they're looking to expand their franchise. Like, I was really struck. Again, I think this was Colbert. Stephen Colbert has been interviewing a lot of people related to Dune. His interviews are great. They're on YouTube. Go watch them.
He's a huge dork.
But he is a huge dork. He's the perfect sort of person for interviews about a story like Dune. But he talked to Denis Villeneuve, and he revealed that he had drawn storyboards for Dune as like a 13-year-old with one of his friends. So this is a story that, you know, he's been wanting to make since he was a teenager. Hans Zimmer, this was apparently a dream project of Hans Zimmer's for like decades. So when Denis Villeneuve approached him to do the movie, he was like, I love Dune. Of course I will do this. And whenever you watch like interviews or behind the scenes things about how Dune Part One was made and this movie, it's very clear that there was just like, this was a passion project just on the biggest scale that is typically reserved for franchises trying to build franchises. Except in this case, it was a really visionary filmmaker with a team of people firing on all cylinders who were just so excited to be there making this movie. Like Florence Pugh, apparently he told her, like, I won't be offended if you say you don't want to be in this movie. It's a small part in this one. And she was like, I just want to come watch you work. Of course I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So like, you can't replicate that just with companies making a thing to make a thing to make money. You know, it's kind of funny because we have this Dune Part Two hype going on. And at the same time, there are like, I read an interview from Dakota Johnson, who was in Madam Web, and she talked about how she's never going to do another superhero movie. And she thinks there's a huge issue with like art being made by committee for algorithms by executives, and how that can sometimes make for kind of crappy art. And she didn't say that was the case in Madam Web, but that's kind of the implication. And like, she says good movies are made by like a creative filmmaker with a team around them who have a vision. And like, here's the example of that. It's called Dune Part Two in theaters right now. So yeah, that I think we could lay down the hype for now. Dune is great. It's well worth your time. Should we talk about some other stuff we've watched?
I think, yeah. If any of you have any opinions on Dune, we'd love to hear them. Because, yeah, I think we've exhausted it. I think I'm happy moving on. Dan, what are you watching? What are all of you watching out there? Or reading, or whatsoever?
All right. You want me to go first? I just talked a bunch. Do you want to talk about what you're watching, Dan?
I ain't watching nothing. I'm watching. I'm watching Shogun, enjoying it. Watch another one tonight, probably.
Yeah.
I'm watching the advanced episodes of Invincible, which are incredible. Looking forward to that.
Oh, nice.
I'm about to start Three Body Problem. I have those advanced episodes too, but I haven't quite. And then this isn't related to fantasy or sci-fi, but I'm watching the final season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. That shit's pretty funny.
Nice. But,
I just love it. Like, just 70 something year old men getting into trouble. Good show.
Yep. You can never go wrong with Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's what a great show. Yeah. So I've been watching Shogun too. Obviously Shogun is probably one of the main things I'm super into right now. Really enjoying it. We've been reviewing it on the site. If you're enjoying watching it, go read those. But yeah, Shogun is another one of these things. You know, Hiroyuki Sanada, who plays Toranaga, had a vision for how he would make a very authentic Japanese period piece if he ever got the chance. And this is the result. He's a producer on the show and as well Sweet. As an actor. So yeah, Shogun's excellence. It scratches that Last Kingdom itch or Game of Thrones, which gets compared to everything, but it's kind of relevant tonally in this case.
It's fine. Embrace
beyond
it.
That, I've been, yeah, embrace it. The Halo show, we just actually debuted an exclusive clip from this week's episode on the site today, but episode 6 of that is coming out tomorrow, so I will be watching that. Halo has been surprisingly good this season. They really stepped up their production quite a bit in season 2, so I'm enjoying that. Avatar The Last Airbender, I'm gonna finish actually like tonight. I have half of one episode left because I paused in the middle of the finale, and it's okay. We'll talk more about Avatar in a second in the lightning round, but I firmly mid is kind of how I feel about it. Decent, but not, you know, the cartoon's just so good. But the biggest thing I have been consuming this past week media wise is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is the new Final Fantasy game that came out, the second in the Final Fantasy Remake trilogy. And it is incredible.
You have a half minutes.
Well, wait. I want to ask you, because I don't know your history with Final Fantasy VII. Did you play the original one?
I didn't play the original. I played Final Fantasy games, but I just didn't play VII. I got around to it eventually, and I played the remake, the first one. And I'll probably play the new one, just not
nice.
I don't feel any need to jump on it immediately. I love Final Fantasy. I love Final Fantasy.
Cool.
I fell off it around 13 and have never really looked back. But I am playing these remakes things.
That's pretty fair. Cool. Yeah, I did the same. I kind of fell off at 13. And then the remakes brought me back. So Seven was my first one that I played myself. I had siblings who played like 6 back when it was technically 3 on the Super Nintendo and stuff like that. So I've played a lot of them, including 6 at this point, but 7 was my first real experience with one. So I'm like firmly in the box of the people that they are, you know, getting with these remakes.
Totally.
It's incredible to me the way they have recreated and expanded the story of Final Fantasy VII for modern times, like modern gaming, while still like capturing the feeling of the original. Like in the original game, you go through Midgar, which was the first remake, and then you're just out on the world map. And that's like a moment of, oh my God, this is overwhelming how big this game is. I didn't know it was going to be like this because Midgar was really contained. And it's kind of amazing how they recreated that, but like with a whole new game now for the second installment, because they do kind of throw you in off the deep end. You know, they introduce you to a ton of stuff out of the gate, and it's like, it's different because it's a whole new game, but it still gives you the feelings of the big beats from the original. Like, nice. It's almost like it's paced differently, but the same. And yeah, it's wonderful. This is the road trip game. If I could give anyone advice, don't rush it. Enjoy it. The characters are going off on a grand adventure. And it's almost more similar to Final Fantasy XV in that way, where it feels like you're hanging out with the party and they're, you know, going from place to place while also trying to do an important mission. So yeah, I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it so far. I could rave good about for it for like hours on end. So I don't but need to do that, but I'm happy for everyone who's else who is enjoying it. Highly recommend.
Cool. Maybe I'll play it too. Sorry to keep like negging you. I know that video games aren't like the
neg away
all the way the thing to talk about in this thing, but yeah, I love Final Fantasy 2. Always have, and I will play it. As for our commenters, I know. Sorry, yes. Things are going a little weird in the stream, but we're back and on again.
Are they?
A little bit here and there.
My bad.
But just, I know some of you guys, Julie, you mentioned the Gilded Age you're watching. I watched the Gilded Age. I like the Gilded Age, and I feel bad for liking the Gilded Age, but I do anyway. So I'm with you. Other folk watching Curb, watching Shogun. People seem to be enjoying the good stuff. And oh, someone mentioned The Regime, which is that out yet? That looks cool on HBO. I don't know if I'll have time to watch it. Oh, it is out. We'll see if I can fit that in because it does look kind of fun. But we'll see.
It does.
Stay tuned. And at least one person wants to talk more about Shogun in the weeks to come. Maybe we will. But for now, why don't we move on to the final segment of our program, the WIC News Lightning Round, which we will get into after this quick message. If you enjoy what we're doing here, like and subscribe. Okay, lightning round.
Nice. Yeah, this, for those of you who've maybe never seen, we're going to go through news stories that we didn't have time to get to in the main show in 20 seconds, or producer Richard buzzes us into shame and infamy. Dan, I think I have the first one of these slated for you. Are you prepared to give your 20-second take? Okay. So Superman Legacy has started filming. It's just called Superman now.
Well, that was a long way around. Got to the obvious conclusion. Yeah, Superman, again, we're talking about franchises. That's a movie people were already kind of side-eyeing, looking like, are you trying to have instant franchise right out the gate by including those other characters in Legacy? Just give us a good story. And I think just titling it simply Superman, with a simply would be better, actually, is a good way to move toward that.
Man, I want Simply Superman now.
Simply Superman.
Give us that movie.
All right. Daniel, The Last of Us Season 2, it's coming, and it's adding more cast members, including, if you play the game, you're talking to people, Spencer Lord as Owen, who I remember, Ariella Bearer as Mel, who I remember, Danny Ramirez as Mandy, remember that guy, and Tati Gabrielle as Nora, no memory.
Yeah, The Last of Us Season 2 is filming right now. They're doing some pretty important scenes from the game, it looks like, based on some of the places they've been renting that have been circulating around social media. These people, they're part of, we'll just say they're part of Abby's crew of friends, if I recall correctly. I think all of these characters. So, yeah, they're all going to have important roles. And that's all I'll say. Play The Last of Us Part 2 if you want your hopes and dreams shattered. All right. Dan, Avatar, The Last Airbender, has been renewed for seasons 2 and 3 on Netflix, which means they're doing the whole story. Are you hyped?
I mean, I'm happy for the cast and crew. It's cool. It's not a terrible show. It's just not super awesome, great. But, you know, it could get better. Sometimes shows need time to sort of grow into themselves. Shows don't really get that nowadays, but it was a success, clearly. Mm-hmm. And I'd say good for them. Maybe I'll watch. They clearly wanted to get to the... Okay, yeah. Rock on, Avatar The Last Airbender. Yeah. You mediocre self. Daniel, the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power showrunners, are already working on breaking the story for Season 3. Season 2 is going to air sometime this year, but we don't know when.
Yep. It's interesting that we got a... So this is from a press release sent out by Amazon that they are currently breaking the story for Season 3. So they extended the deal with the Rings of Power showrunners. They confirmed Season 2. It's coming this year, but we don't know when. So it's good to know Amazon is thinking of the future still with this show, despite kind of, you know, the somewhat mixed reception of the first season. They want to make more. Dan, Twilight, that popular vampire romance series, it's being remade into an animated series.
I think that's kind of cool. Twilight, you know, very popular, very controversial back in the day, very successful. We heard they're making a new TV show, And it's kind of like, okay, another reboot of a thing that's popular like 20 years ago, but at least an animated show, if you're going to do it, it's a little different at least. Like maybe they can do things they couldn't do a show. So if you're going to make a remake, sure. Have it be a little bit different. Twilight animation, sparkling vampire. They'll sparkle so pretty. Okay.
They will. They can sparkle them in whatever cool creative way they want.
Exactly. Daniel, The Boys season 4 going to premiere on June 13th, dropping its first 3 episodes all at once on Amazon Prime Video. Thoughts?
Yep. Yep. The Boys is coming back June 13th. I don't know how I feel. I just wish these studios would stop rushing through their seasons. So, you know, take a note from Shogun, because Shogun's out and that's doing one a week. I think they did 2 at the start, but like, if your show's good enough, we'll come back even if you just give us one episode to start. But I am, you know, it'll be fun to watch The Boys again. I'm sure it's going to be a good time.
Notes.
All right, Dan, this is a show you like. Tell us about this person. So The Sandman has officially cast Barry Sloane as Destruction.
I'm not sure it's officially yet, but here's a shirtless man. His name is Barry Sloane. He's going to play Destruction, the personification of Destruction, Sandman. Sandman's a show that really got kind of badly timed. It got hit by the strikes really hard, hit by the pandemic the first time around. I liked it. I hope it comes back. Destruction's an important character. There are a bunch of new ones who introduced this season. I'm looking forward to watching it. I just hope I get to see more, and I think I will. Beyond that, a little more uncertain, but you go, Sandman. Make yourself. And finally, Dan, for all the book folk out there, author Brandon Sanderson, author of such books as so many books, has announced a new secret project novel. It's set in a future era of his cosmology called the Cosmere, and will have high Cosmere connectivity. Dan, please help fill in these quotes that I'm making.
Yes. So Brandon Sanderson announced he wrote a new novel in secret. He's going to reveal details about it later this month. But this is, so it's set in the Cosmere, his shared universe of all his adult fantasy stories. And high Cosmere connectivity means it will have lots of links to those other stories, which they don't always. Sometimes his books are set in the Cosmere, but they're like pretty standalone. So this is hugely exciting news for Sanderson fans. New surprise book coming, and it's going to be an important one, it sounds like. Hooray! Nice.
Yeah, I'm reading Sanderson now. I'm looking forward to talking more about him with you, about the Mistborn series. And that's our show, everybody.
Hooray!
As always, we're happy to have you here. Sorry for the connection issues. It happens sometimes. Look, computers are confusing. I don't understand them. Nobody understands them. And sometimes they don't behave the way we want. We're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 on the East Coast, 1 in the mountains, and noon in California. We're also available wherever podcasts are available. Listen in podcast form, be it iTunes, and for just a little more time, Google Play, although I think they are discontinuing that. But we're other places, mm-hmm. too. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a comment. You always do. We always love your comments. You know that. And Julie Davies, thanks us for the color coordination. I guess we're both wearing shades of olive. We'll try. We can do more costumes.
If
you guys like. Sorry?
I said, this is gray. I don't know what we're talking about. But when Fallout comes out, I will wear a costume on the show. That's a promise.
Cool. We'll see what happens there. And until next time, as they say on Arrakis, goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At your job, Do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.